And here's your prescription.
I know just the pharmacy to get this filled.
Who are you?
A pharmacy benefit manager. A middleman your insurer uses to decide which medicines you can get, what you pay, and sometimes even which pharmacy you should go to.
Why can't I go to a pharmacy in my neighborhood?
Because I make more money when you go to a pharmacy I own.
No one should stand between you and your medicine. Visit phrma.org/middleman to learn more. Paid for by Pharma.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex, you're a native Pennsylvanian. Can you describe for me what you think the tenor, the mood is for like half of the Keystone State waking up today?
Probably more than half. I think there's some despondence, Richard, over what Penn State did this weekend. They have another shot. They play Michigan. I think that Penn State fans overwhelmingly would have told you before the year that if they went 1-1 in those games, they would feel pretty good and they would have an opportunity to be right there for the playoff, depending on the sequencing of things around them. What happened yesterday in Columbus does not inspire confidence that it'll be a different result when they play against Michigan, but we'll see. Should we hurry it up?
I believe we should. We're going to put 30 minutes on the clock, and we're going to talk about a lot of college football games. Maybe it'll take 30 minutes. Maybe it won't. I think my guy's got to go to the airport or something today, so maybe it will. All right, we start in 3, 2, 1. Ohio State, 20. Penn State, 12. Alex, I don't really know what to do here beyond sort of the obvious. Like, it's Penn State. You had a championship defensive effort in this game.
Absolutely.
You could not move the ball. You were not credible moving the ball, a credible threat moving the ball in this game. At the end of the day, one of these two teams had Marvin Harrison Jr., the other did not.
Yeah, I don't want to flatten the analysis too much, but we talked about this before the game. The difference in the wide receiving group for Ohio State, Reed, Marvin, but also Buka, but mainly Marvin, and Penn State was enormous and maybe decisive.
Buka didn't play.
Yep, he did not play in this game. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a special player, and Penn State's wide receivers are not special players. And the lack of separation that they created from, you know, a pretty solid Ohio State secondary did not give Drew Aller much of a chance. I also don't think Drew Aller did anything wowing with the opportunity. It was just a do not have the guys on that side of the ball situation for Penn State. That's all it is. I do think that for some period of time, Penn State is going to see nightmares of JT Tuimoloau. It's just like 2 years in a row of this edge defender for Ohio State just legacy gaming them and really putting them into a blender. What can you say about the Ohio State defense? Like, they are there to play. All of the issues with Ohio State's offense are what they are. But like, Jim Knowles and the defense have this thing figured out. It's championship caliber. Also, I think I would add to this. If not for a blocked field goal going the other way 7 years ago, we talk about James Franklin like a lot differently. Like, dude, like, it's $10 million a year, man. And you spend.
Tell him about it.
Is it not a reasonable point? Like, he spends a very long while kind of negging the university and the fan base, you know, give me more things so we can compete. He was talking this week about how he thinks that they had closed that gap with these top couple of teams in the country. And then you come out and you lose the latest one of these games, which you've lost every one of in the big spots. I think they do have a few Michigan wins, but you lose these games in the big spots against the teams that you measure yourself against every time for 7 years. I don't know. I mean, it's what the money is for.
Alex, last week you said that you would have taken the Iowa game under like 26, and I think the total closed at 36. This week's total closed at around 30.5. It basically never got close to hitting that number. Minnesota 12, Iowa 10. It went under. PJ Fleck finally gets Floyd of Rosedale, finally beats Iowa as the head coach of Minnesota. Look, you know where we're going with this. Iowa, I will say, objectively, the funniest way Iowa could lose this game is their corner returning a punt return for a touchdown in a one-score game in which they have gained 12 yards of offense in the second half, only for it to be called back because of a penalty that I think we'll talk about in a second that I believe was ticky-tack. But Iowa, if you play fine margin games, you win fine margin prizes. And that's what this was. And I know the quarterback is injured. I know the tight end is injured.
I know. Yeah.
12 yards in the second half. Can't be that.
Yeah. I want to not lose sight of two things. One is that the offense, that is underachievement, even given everything that is wrong and everyone that is injured. Like, it is underachievement. And don't lose sight of the main thing there, which is that, like, Brian's pretty terrible at this, man. And, like, there are coordinators who probably would have gotten a few more points here. And that's on Kirk. But if we want to talk about the end of the game, I don't think in general, I don't really subscribe to you should have played better, so not left it in the official's hands. Like, there are going to be close games in football. I understand that. Reasonable people can differ. I think that the call that said at the end of the game was the right call. And does that mean it wasn't ticky-tack? Does that mean that Iowa fans shouldn't feel robbed? No. It probably is the definition of ticky-tack, but that's a different thing than wrong. I did check in with a mutual friend of ours who is an NCAA official in Division I. It's really a what color is the dress thing with what you saw Cooper DeJean doing. I don't think he was trying to fair catch. I think he was basically making a poison call, telling people to get away from the ball.
Right.
But his hand you got to remember, though, that the coverage guys on the punt team cannot see where the ball is up in the air. They're looking at the returner. They don't know that there's no plausible chance it's going to catch this thing. The rule is in place so that you don't confuse the gunners and have them wind up maybe like blowing up a guy who's actually making a fair catch. I understand why he feels robbed. I also think it was an invalid signal. I totally understand why he feels robbed.
Alex, I think he was, because for me, what's clearer in that situation is when your arm goes above parallel to do one of these, right? That's not what happened. He's got one arm pointing, and then he's got the other obviously gesticulating or whatever, and he's more out to the side. In real time, that to me is like, I don't know how you think that's a very clear, fair catch signal. And even that, Alex, and I texted you this yesterday, I didn't know you could review this.
I'm not entirely sure of the review protocol or if it just became reviewable because it was a touchdown and every scoring play is reviewed and they saw it in the Big Ten Command Center. It is overly litigious. I think this was a good point that I saw Victoria Zeller made on Twitter. Like, I understand very much that, like, it's just kind of a paperworky, annoying way to sort of decide a game. Though, again, Utah still had great field position and threw a pick. Not that should change how you view this. But look, I think it was like a really annoying correct call. I'm not trying to be performative about it. Let's also say, though, that it was like an absurd play by Cooper DeJean, who could be an All-American at two different positions. Like, and it's a shame that it wipes out like what would have been just an all-time awesome punt return in that spot. So I think I sympathize with the officials on it, but I also sympathize with Iowa fans. I'm not running in the caucuses. I'm not trying to walk both sides. I just think it's a tough situation. Speaking of tough situations, Michigan a lot, Michigan State very few. Hitler was on the scoreboard for Michigan State as well. They're a Mad Lib. They're a Mad Lib, Richard. This program is a complete Mad Lib.
Alex, there were more Adolf Hitlers on the scoreboard than there were points for Michigan State.
Is that good? Is that what you want? Is that?
It's not great, buddy.
Okay.
It's not great.
Rutgers 31, Indiana 14. Rutgers is 6-2. They are going to a bowl game. I think they're going to finish 6-6, but this is what you do. You take advantage of the soft schedule at the beginning of your Big Ten slate, and you take care of business. Gavin Wimsatt, 3 rushing touchdowns, the most enjoyable quarterback they've had in quite some time. So well done to Rutgers for taking advantage of the schedule in the way that they have. Also in this conference this week, Richard, Nebraska starting to look like maybe, not that Northwestern is anything special, but like maybe could salvage a bowl in Matt Rhule year one. Very impressive. And Wisconsin, Illinois, Wisconsin now maybe poking back into Big Ten West contention despite the loss to Iowa. I don't know. It's a possibility.
Yeah, Jerjon Newton ejected in this game. Wisconsin drives down the length of the field and scores because they throw it to a defensive lineman on, I believe, 4th down. Box office stuff from Wisconsin. If they're rounding into form, they're rounding into form. What's definitely in form, Alex, is our friends at Home Field Apparel. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code SCD20. Get 20% off of your first order at homefieldapparel.com. We've been fine partners with our friends at Home Field for about as long as we've done this show. We appreciate them very much. And Alex, we also appreciate this.
Barnes is going to pass 4-man rush. Lots of time looking, scrambling. Bryson looking down the field, getting to the outside. Bryson Barnes, 30, 25, 20, 15, and he's down.
Timeout.
Timeout with 6 seconds, 5 seconds to play. Bryson Barnes gets to the 17-yard line, and Utah's now in field goal range with 5 seconds to play.
Onwards to the Pac-12. That's Bill Riley of the Utah Sports Network from Learfield. Check them out in the Varsity Network app. Check out the College Football Blitz every Saturday from noon Eastern to midnight, free on the Varsity app. It's the Red Zone channel for college football, and it's free on the Varsity app, available on Apple and Android devices. Also available on Apple, Android, whatever the hell you use, whatever medium you can find, you will find Utah beating USC. I don't know if it's a death taxes situation, but it isn't anywhere, anytime, your house, their house, on vacation in Vegas, doesn't matter. USC with Lincoln Riley apparently cannot find a way to beat this team.
It's funny because you're kind of right that it's a your house, my house, anytime thing, but this shows something new for them because they do it with the backup quarterback, Bryson Barnes, and they do it
and a
safety at running back, Sione Vaki. And they also did it at the Coliseum. Utah is a different proposition in the last few years at Rice-Eccles and on the road. This is a huge, huge new ground broken win for them, which is weird to say given the way that they obviously own this program. But to do it in this environment with this set of injuries, especially at quarterback and Cam Rising not playing, is huge. I sent my parents and my brother to this game because I had them all together here in town. They paid $80 each to sit like right off the field in the end zone, and they got a classic. I'm happy for them. Couple things here. USC defense, yeah, not up to it. Confirmed. I believe you said, Richard, Utah cannot score 21 points in this game during the midweek. They scored, you know, considerably more than that. It's unacceptable. I don't understand how you can't fire Alex Grinch if you're serious remotely, if you're Lincoln Riley. But on the last drive, I felt bad for Bear Alexander on that targeting. I think that was kind of the spot in that rule that is unfortunate and that I don't like and that I don't have a great answer for what should be done about it policy-wise. But he wasn't trying to hit Bryson Barnes in the head. He was trying, if anything, to be kind of friendly. And it was face-to-face, not head-to-face. Unfortunate that the game sort of hinged on that, but it didn't really, because Bryson Barnes then makes this hell of a scramble for 26 yards to set up the field goal. He's tough, man. Whittingham's tough. This is a well-coached football team.
Yeah, it's the situation where USC, are we supposed to take you seriously if this is what you're going to do? And Lincoln Riley, after the game, does the thing where it's like, oh, we like overachieved last year and that created expectations. Like, dude, save it, man.
Oh, come on.
You're
dude.
USC. Yeah. All right.
He's also like, I don't know where the narrative starts that we think about the national championship. Like, again, dude, like James Franklin, Lincoln Riley, what is the money for? Why do you make all of this money? Why do you have the position that you have in the sport? It's because they think that you can do that for the teams that hire you. It's embarrassing. Can't talk like that. It's loser behavior. Oregon 38, Wazoo 24. Bucky Irving, Richard, simply better than the people trying to tackle him week in, week out.
Yeah, I thought this spread was a little weird. It was like 22 or 24.
Yeah, you did think it was weird.
But yes. Yeah, Oregon took care of business. I mean, that is what it is. UCLA crushed Stanford. We don't even have the score on there. UCLA
started Ethan
Garbers over Dante Moore. Yeah, started Ethan Garbers in place of Dante Moore. And I guess it worked.
look, you pick this up if you listen to the Hurry Up enough times. When a game is a certain kind of blowout, we don't say the score. It's very many to very few. Michigan State also gets that treatment this week. Very few to very few. Washington 15, Arizona State 7. I never took it seriously that Washington would not ultimately win the game. They got some.
Oh, I did.
They got some help, though.
You weren't watching it.
I wasn't watching it live. I came back to it this morning, and I did see the oddly picked up flag on the clear holding slash pass interference that Washington used to deny Arizona State near the end of this game. You were explaining to me that they might lose, and I was like, Richard, I'm not sure about that.
This was touch and go, man. This was touch and go because Washington just... Look, Penix was getting pressure to hell in this game. It was the game where they didn't hit every deep ball. Like, we said that was going to happen. Just law of averages, that is going to happen at some point in time. And it did happen in this game. Arizona State's offense was not exactly what you wanted. And I know that they've been really injured this season. I get that. God, that pick six is just tough. And also, Arizona State, the kicking situation also wasn't good. They were missing some field goals in this game, too. It's hard to spring an upset when you're doing that. I do understand Arizona State going for it on some fourth downs, trying to fix some stuff out there because you're trying to maximize as the underdog in this game, as the heavy underdog in this game. But Arizona State, just not enough, unfortunately, in the end. To the ACC, speaking of not enough, in the end, Florida State 38, Duke 20. I don't think Duke would have won this game with Riley Leonard because I do think Florida State was coming on very strong at that time and would have figured it out. But in the red zone, Riley Leonard gets sacked and tweaks that ankle again that you know he's on, a hurt ankle, and he goes out of the game. And Florida State basically is like, okay, well, you can't pass now. So we're going to play, you know, we're going to play like a 1985 Bears front and just you figure it out. And then they couldn't. And then the cream rose to the top.
Would have been interesting to see what happened if he didn't get hurt against Notre Dame and then get hurt again here. Mike Elko said that he didn't feel medically comfortable putting him back in the game. So it sucks the way that a really awesome kind of come up season can partially unravel just based on shit like that. It's a cruel sport. Speaking of a cruel sport, UVA 31, UNC 27. Richard, you want to cover the how the hell did UNC let this happen angle, and I want you to do that. But I will say, happy for UVA. For UVA, which has mostly been just a bottomless pit of on-field sadness this year. And that sucks given what we don't even have to describe in detail because you know with the killing of three of their brothers on that team last year. Like, you just want to see these guys have uplifting moments, and this is certainly one. So it's great for them.
Yeah, I think for North Carolina, it boils down to they got into some third down situations that they weren't able to convert, and it stopped drives that had significant progress. Like, and there were some drops, and it was like, it's one of those weird, you can take the divisions out of the ACC, but you can't take the Coastal out of the ACC. And the Coastal spirit was in the ACC here. You know, to the point that Virginia at one point in time was going into the end zone to ice this game and then fumbles out of the back of the end zone and gives Drake May and the Heels the ball back. They start driving. You're like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then UVA stands tall on defense again. Great job for the Hoos. I mean, our hats off to you.
There were some considerable problems in the ACC this week with routine icings of games. We'll come back to that. Miami 28, Clemson 0. I said 20, not 0. I think Dabo might have known what was coming when he warned people that maybe they should lose another game or two leading into this game. I think Miami is legitimately good. And like as we kind of discussed, that's part of why the thing the other week with Georgia Tech was such a needless shame, because it's going to put a cap on what they can be. But that defense is varsity, like really varsity. Also, they got this like freshman edge rusher, Reuben Bain, who was just tossing Clemson's right tackle routinely in this game. Very impressive stuff.
One point of order here. Mario Cristobal almost did it again, by the way. 90 seconds left. About 35, 40 yards to field goal territory, a timeout. They play for overtime.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. All right. Boston College 38, Georgia Tech 23. BC, hey.
Four wins. They got four
wins. They rip off 21 points. Yeah, they rip off 21 points in the fourth quarter and dropped the hammer on this game.
Yeah. Richard, it's funny because, like, I mean, you know, everyone, if you're listening to this for a while, you know how we both have talked about BC coming into this year early in the year. None of their results really disabuse you of the notion that they aren't good, but, like, it matters what happens on the field. Like, they keep winning these very narrow games against pretty bad teams, and that, but that counts, and that puts you above those very, very bad teams in the only way that actually matters. They're 4-3. They're 2-2 in the league. It's pretty impressive stuff. Also, an amazing pick six in this game. Like, a kind of an awkward, like, how did that happen? But it was like a one-handed rip away from the receiver who basically had the ball by Amari Jackson for BC. Wound up being critical here. Wake 21, Pitt 17. I don't know that I want to talk about it. Will you take this, please, and then move us on to the SEC? I don't really want to discuss it.
So Pitt 50-ish seconds left, third down. Their quarterback goes to end the game. He scrambles and he got the first down. And then, because we live in a world where we judge 10 yards by two sticks and a piece of chain, he goes down, or is ruled to have gone down, before the first down line. This is the eye of the beholder thing, where do you start the slide is in the eye of the beholder of the referee. The referee decided it was short of the line to gain. That gave Wake the ball back. Wake's on QB3 with like 40 seconds left, drives the ball the length of the field in like four plays, scores to win the game. Again, you can take the Coastal out of the ACC, but you cannot take the spirit of the thing. And this, for God's sakes, was the spirit of the thing.
Alabama 34, Tennessee 20. I felt after the Texas game that it was close to 100% that Alabama would lose a second game. Defense good, Citrus Bowl. That chance goes down with each passing week. It's now probably under 50% that they're going to lose again. It might just be happening.
You get, like, a little worried?
Yeah, I am. And I don't think it's going to be a road Iron Bowl loss here either. So LSU, the hopes of a nation rest on your shoulders if this is going to not work out for Alabama this year. I think they're kind of figuring out how to play with what they've got. Like, they just look more together right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a little bit of an offensive game plan. Yes, is it some chuck and duck? It is. But Jermaine Burton is good, I guess. Like, Jermaine Burton is really emerging here as a go-to guy. I also think Josh Heupel was not very thrilled about the officiating. Go watch his press conference to find that clip. Missouri 34, South Carolina 12. Missouri's good.
They are good. And really,
I know,
good,
Carolina has some injury situations, and I also think that situation is getting a little weird in Columbia, but Missouri's good.
I think the key thing for Missouri here is that they didn't win this game in the way that you see Missouri scored in the 30s that you would maybe think. And you know, we talk so much, we do it every week, about their wide receiver group, which has been awesome. But here they ran the hell out of the ball, and the defense, which has been kind of the undergirding thing all year, just really delivered. Like, really, really delivered. South Carolina is in disarray. Like, and it hurts them that Juice Wells isn't there, but it's weird what's happening there. I agree. At least Nick Harbor had a couple of nice catches in this game. Like, need something to hang your hat on if you're South Carolina, and there's not much at the moment.
Ole Miss 28, Auburn 21 in the Freeze Bowl. Auburn just can't throw the ball. It's unserious until they can. It kind of is what it is. LSU absolutely destroyed Army. It was like 62-0, I think, like that.
Yep. Many to
absolutely
few.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolute dismantling on that respect. Mississippi State 7, Arkansas 3. Dude, Arkansas, really, really good defense. We've talked about this in a couple of the midweek shows. That offense is just really tough, which is weird because KJ Jefferson is at least functional to good as a college quarterback. It kind of is an is-what-it-is situation there, you know.
Yeah, I kind of think that they are going to beat Auburn to get an SEC win, because – where is Auburn's yardage going to come from in that game? Where are they going to score? But 0-8, which is a Chad Morrising, is on the table for Arkansas. Things are getting hairy once again. Oklahoma 31, UCF 29. Drake Stoops has made a career. That's kind of my note from this game. Like, it's kind of wild that he is the go-to target for them in a lot of these tough situations, given just like the frankly much faster and more athletic players they give the ball to. But he has made himself indispensable to that team over a lot of years. It's impressive. I mean, it's not like, you know, you might assume certain things like, oh, he got a helmet because he's Bob's son. Like, Dabo has done that numerous times at Clemson. The coaches do that historically. This guy's a player. He made some huge plays for them, as he has done many a time.
UCF's two-point play at the end of the game there will haunt me forever. Double pass in the red zone. One option for the guy who catches the pass. Oh, Jesus Christ. Texas 31, Houston 24. Quinn Ewers gets hurt in this game. Texas goes up 21 points. Houston storms all the way back, ties the game. Then it gets into another spot situation on third and inches, I believe. And it doesn't work out for our friends in Houston, which is tough to see. Malik Murphy was the backup quarterback and finished the game, even though they said on the broadcast that Arch took snaps with the twos all week. I don't know, man. Houston's better than Texas.
The other way around is what you meant to say, but yes. Hey, great handoff though by Malik. They say he's good. He did what he had to do. Texas Tech and BYU. I actually didn't write down the final, but it was, I think, a 14-point BYU win over Texas Tech. Watched a lot of this game. Jake Strong, the replacement right now at quarterback for Tyler Shuck, who's hurt, is playing hard. He's a freshman, got his first work a week ago in the K-State loss, but he's not ready. Like, it's not there. And I think the team is too aerated, too pass based to just set it and forget it with a new quarterback. They turned it over five times, I believe, in this game, including three picks, and they weren't the good kind. It was ugly. Baylor 32, Cincinnati 29. Richard, Cincinnati has totally, totally lost the plot.
Nah, and look, Baylor's coming off a bye week. I get it, but it ain't from Cincinnati at all. And they look like the team out of these four that really was not ready for primetime coming into this league. Oklahoma State 38, West Virginia 34.
48. 34,
I will say.
Yep.
48. Sorry, I can't read. Look, Oklahoma State found it out at quarterback. They found it out.
It's funny how, like, gravity sometimes takes us back to where we are used to being. Like, early in this year, looked like Oklahoma State, possibly one of the worst teams in the Big 12. Like, they're going to have to run this guy finally at some point out of town. Looked like West Virginia, like Neil Brown getting off the hot seat. Like, you know, what a nice start they're having. And it's week eight, and things are starting to look more like they usually look. And like you figured that they look, given these teams and these coaching situations. It's just funny how that happens. K-State 41, TCU 3. K-State is extremely K-State, man. 52 carries for 343 kind of says it all. 9 different ball carriers, 6 of whom were actually productive for them in this game. They have a system. They have the blockers to do this. It works. Also, DJ Giddens in the receiving game had an extremely long catch and run in this game. They are serious. And I think that we need to take it somewhat seriously that they could get back to that Big 12 title game. If it's not going to be a Red River rematch, that's going to be wise because K-State gets there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. G5 mishmash hour. We're not even in stoppage time yet. We're good on time,
we're going
baby.
So fast.
Air Force 17. Navy 6. Under. Many are saying it. Under. It's good process to take this game under. This game did not get close. Air Force had a 94-yard touchdown, which was the longest touchdown, I believe, in school history, passing-wise. Yep. And you were like, oh, maybe it's going to be one of those days. It wasn't. Navy's offense stinks.
I mean, Air Force's defense outscored Navy's offense by way of a late pick six in this game that, I mean, I think it made it 17-0, so I'm not going to say it put it away. Because I think once it was more than 7-0, this game was essentially put away. But Air Force is a lot better than Navy right now and has everything right in front of them to play in a New Year's Bowl this year. So it's a very exciting time in Colorado Springs. This was an interesting week in the Mountain West because the conference contenders were all either playing a non-conference game like Air Force or just not playing at all. Wyoming didn't play. Fresno didn't play. Boise, if you count them as a contender, didn't play. But I guess a team that is maybe a contender, and now we have to take them pretty seriously, is UNLV, 25-23 over Colorado State. UNLV 6-1. Barring very surprising things or too many teams being eligible and them getting left out, they're going to play in a bowl game for the first time in a very long while. They had to come back from 13 down at half. Jose Pisano, we talked about earlier this year, hit 6 field goals, in all 6 of them, 6 for 6, including a chip shot winner. Bobby Petrino brought him over from Missouri State. Petrino didn't last. Kicker did. Working out great. Barry Odom, Richard, is doing like one of the great year one jobs in the sport right now. I don't know if it's a 1 year flash in the pan, like what happened with Jim Moore Jr. at UConn last year, or if it's the establishment of a longer run of prosperity and kind of a second, third go around for a coach like Brady Hoke had at San Diego State. And Richard, I do mean like he had past tense at San Diego State.
Nevada 6, San Diego State nothing.
What is there to say? What is there to say?
There's not much. Tulane 35, North Texas 28. North Texas kind of came back a little bit here. I believe Tulane jumped out to an early lead to start things out. Look, it's going to be fascinating, I think, when it comes down to brass tacks, whether we're talking about Tulane for that New Year's Six spot or Air Force, obviously Tulane's loss coming to an SEC team.
Yeah, Tulane is a solid team, and I think this was not the – I don't know that this is like the preferred game state for them, like having to answer a bunch of scores late in the game by a team that likes to keep it moving pretty quickly the way that North Texas does. They got the quarterback this year. Like, I think Michael Pratt has really elevated himself in the absence of Tajay Spears, who was the sun and the moon and the stars for this team in their Cotton Bowl run last year. And Pratt was a good player on that team as well. He was the quarterback of that team. But they rely on him more because they have to, and he has paid that off. He had the winning scamper from like 20 yards out with 2.5 minutes left in this game. Good player. UTSA 36, FAU 10. Step back for FAU after they really put it on USF last week. Richard, the UTSA may be a forgotten team because of how rough things looked early for them in the non-con, but they still haven't lost a game in the American in program history. And Frank Harris is healthy, looks healthy, healthier. Got to take them seriously along with Tulane and Memphis in this conference.
Memphis 45, UAB 21. You also might need to take Memphis seriously because this Memphis team is probably going to finish, or at least should finish, the season undefeated going home.
Yeah, and I think that would put them at 10-2. This was 21 all, and I was like, you know, not great. And then they scored all of the points remaining in this game. They went on a 24-0 run to finish. I don't think they have, of the three quarterback situations between Michael Pratt at Tulane, Frank Harris at UTSA, and Hennigan, Seth Hennigan at Memphis, Memphis is by far the weakest. And that is just the timer going off, not a statement of disagreement. They're going to have to work through that. I mean, they're working through it just fine. But they don't, for scoring as much as they do, they don't get a whole ton out of their quarterback position. And that's a thing to monitor, but I agree they're a very good team. SMU 55, Temple nothing. On here because kind of checking in on some bad situations. Richard, it's grim in Philadelphia here for Temple. Like, just kind of appears that Stan Drayton is not really going to get liftoff in this gig.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like pre-Matt Rule, pre-Adazio, like when it was like really, really bad there.
It can get bad. It can get bad when it's bad. Yeah. Charlotte 10, ECU 7. Speaking of getting bad, ECU is kind of quietly built itself up over the last few years from being pretty lousy to being pretty good, being a solid bowl team. This has gone in the complete other direction, and they're 1-5. And I think they are an underrated, damn, they really missed that quarterback spot right now with Holton Ahlers, who was not on Davey O'Brien lists, but wasn't winning big time awards for this program, but had an arm and at least was an NFL camp guy this year. They miss him. They have nothing.
Toledo 21, Miami 17. I don't think, like, Toledo's the best offense in the MAC, right? Quite clear.
Best team in the MAC,
and
I think.
They're probably the best. Yeah. Right. They're probably best team in the MAC here, but they were pushed by Miami.
They were. I think there is a good chance that this is the first of two matchups between these teams, but Brett Gabbert didn't do a lot here. The defense has reigned. Gage Larvidane, the wide receiver for Miami, one of the best players in the G5 this year. FCS transfer up. He had 85 yards, but Toledo just a little bit too much, as they have tended to be in the last year and a half against MAC opponents. Bowling Green 41, Akron 14. The Moorhead thing at Akron is not working at all, which is a bit surprising. I don't know if it should be surprising. I think that I had a decent hopes for that. Yeah. No, I understand what Akron is, but I think you look at how quickly MAC programs can rise if they get a few things right on even just one side of the ball. You know, look at Northern Illinois a couple years ago, for instance, and you thought, oh, that could happen at Akron. It is not happening at all at Akron. Things are as bleak for the Zips under Joe Moorhead as they are all the time for everybody. Georgia State 20, Louisiana 17. Richard, this is my, I think, eat shit team of the year by far with Georgia State. They are just stacking results, and this was on the road, I believe, at Lafayette. Just stacking, yes, results that strongly suggest that they are a very good team. You know, probably not the class of the Sun Belt. We saw what Troy did to them in their only loss. But this was a misevaluation, I think, on my part before the season. Hand up on that. I don't know what they put in the sauce before this year that changed, because I think that if you looked at, if you assess the roster situation, it looked similar. It didn't look like a massive overhaul that was in position to change what they are, but they're good. And James Madison is ineligible, which sucks. Troy's in the West. Like, it's possible that Georgia State is going to go ahead and like play in the Sun Belt Championship this year. It's been a nice, nice step forward.
Old Dominion 28, App State 21. Might get a little spicy at App State.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because yeah, I mean, it should. Like, they have had some tough close losses against some pretty good teams the last few years. This is not in that vein. This is not acceptable. JMU 20, Marshall 9, JMU 7-0, and just said it that they're not going to be eligible. But note some great stuff when you see it. This might be the best team in the G5, honestly. Like, they're really exceptional in their second year in FBS. Jalen Green had 5 sacks in this game. We mentioned him back when he was kind of a terror against UVA at the beginning of the season. He has 13 sacks on the year to lead all of the land. Also, James Madison is so mad at the NCAA that because the stats page had not been appropriately updated, Kurt Cignetti was like, you know, you can't see JMU stats on the NCAA's website. We're being shadow banned. And, you know, hey, that's fine. Well, that's fine.
You should be using cfbstats.com. Marshall was pretty injured in this game, which kind of is what it is. But yeah, they didn't really have anything on offense, primarily because their best player was hurt. CUSA weeknight, very, very quickly. FIU, Sam Houston State. Sam Houston State still over. I feel terrible for them because I don't actually think they're that bad. They have had a lot of close shaves, which is really tough.
I think they're going to get one in the next couple weeks, I think. But I'm not sure about this FBS thing in general for them.
Fair.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I don't think their head coach, Casey Keeler, is sure either, if you just look back at some of the things that he said over the years. Jacksonville State over Western Kentucky, 2017. That's a program that probably feels a lot better about going from FCS to FBS. Big win for JSU, except in the same way that they are not eligible for postseason play. So Western Kentucky is still, I think, right there to have a date with Liberty in the conference title game. But before that, those teams are going to play each other in just these next couple of days, and that'll be, I think, a pretty compelling game on Tuesday night if you are looking for some football. Richard, that was a pretty quick hurry up. We were only like 6 minutes over time.
You got to play your way on. It's the season. You got to play your way on. A lot of decisions are made late Saturday night. Culling, trimming the fat, culling the herd. It's that season, baby. We're on the business end.